Good morning, everyone, and thank you for being out here so early. I'm going to present only one case, and this case is a little different because I'm going to focus more on the process of following the mother as opposed to the actual clinical case of the mother. But before I start, I want to put this in some context. As you can see from the data up on the screen, in 1991, which was 23 years ago, we really reached a peak of congenital syphilis incidents in New York, related probably to this being the height of the crack epidemic, and many of these infants were co-infected with HIV and with syphilis. We've seen this number come down, which we're quite happy about, and now that the number is so low, we feel like we are within reach almost of eliminating congenital syphilis, and it becomes even more important in reaching this goal to make sure that we have our clinical and surveillance systems in place and adequately functioning so that we can reach the goal of eliminating congenital syphilis. The New York City Department of Health has a congenital syphilis infection coordinator who follows and tracks all pregnant women with syphilis. So we sort of ask ourselves, in spite of that, what went right and what went wrong in the case that I'm going to present. This patient, when she delivered, was 32 years old. She was born in Trinidad. Her husband lived in Trinidad, and she traveled back and forth. In 2009, she was found on a routine screening exam out of New York State to have syphilis of unknown duration. Her titer at that time was 1 to 64. She was treated, and we were able to confirm the treatment with three injections of bicillin. She became known to the STD clinics in New York because shortly after she moved to the city, she began to go to the STD clinic every 6 or 8 months for a titer check. And I want to explain, in our clinics, when patients come in, they're coming only for a titer check. They have, as part of the registration process, they have a brief triage interview. They go directly to phlebotomy. They have their titers done, and then they go home, and they are called back only if the results of the titer triggers an investigation or triggers an alert. But she was, as you can see from the cases, very conscientious about coming in. These are her pre-pregnancy syphilis titers. You can see in June of 2011, she bumps her titer back from 1 to 2 to 1 to 8, and we retreated her, and she attributed the bump, and so did we, to a recent visit to Trinidad and really an unknown treatment status of her husband. But then her titers begin to fall again. And she becomes pregnant in February of 2013. She received ongoing prenatal care starting in early March of 2013. She had multiple titer checks done at different laboratories, which is part of the complications of this case. She had early prenatal care. She had an infectious disease consult that was ordered by her OBGYN and who, right around this point. And his interpretation of the titers was that they were bouncing around, one, because she was being tested at different laboratories, and two, that this was related to the pregnancy, not to having an active infection. And he recommended that unless there was a fourfold titer increase from the RPR of 1 to 16 when she, at the beginning of the pregnancy, that she did not need to be treated. We became aware that she was infected through our surveillance system, and we began a case investigation in late March. We had fairly frequent contact with the patient, all of which is documented in the narrative section of our surveillance system, but the clinic checking it off in the clinical module of that system, which would have triggered the congenital syphilis coordinator to become aware of the case, did not happen. So we had excellent case investigation and fairly ongoing discussion between the patient and the DIS about what was going on and whether she should be treated and why was she getting a different answer from the health department than from her doctor. And finally, the case was referred to the Bureau of STD Control Central Office because late in the pregnancy her titers were still bouncing around and the surveillance staff was concerned that she still had not been treated. So we discussed the case with her OBGYN, and she received the first of three planned bicillins. Unfortunately, it was a week before she delivered, a week later, and was unable to receive the other two. And at that point, the OBGYN was stuck in a situation where he needed to deliver her fairly early in pregnancy and get the baby out because she was diabetic, and we sort of were hoping she could keep the baby in for a little longer and get more syphilis treatment. The baby was born alive and healthy at 39 weeks of gestation, weighing 4,000 grams. There were no physical signs of congenital syphilis. The long bone radiographs were normal. The CSF was normal. The CSF-VDRL was non-reactive. The baby had an RPR of 1:1 with TPPA positive and was treated for 10 days with aqueous penicillin. So I'm going to open this up to the panelists. Some of our concerns were, how does one reconcile different laboratories? And I want to talk, before I do that, I want to talk a little bit about our work on this case. In response to this, we really began to rethink our policy of titer checks, and we now have patients, we now ask as part of the registration and triage process whether a patient is pregnant, and all pregnant patients coming in for whatever reasons now need to see a provider. We are hoping we will improve communication and coordination between the clinical and the surveillance staff, and we've held several continuing education sessions for our providers on congenital syphilis. In terms of missed opportunities in the surveillance system, we're very concerned that this was entered into the narrative notes, but that the congenital syphilis infection coordinator was not aware of the case because of the way it was recorded in our surveillance system, and that there was not enough communication between the different sides of the work that we do. And lastly, our public health response. We're concerned that the titer rise was not adequately assessed or treated. And in response to that, we've increased the number of OBGYN grand rounds and primary care grand rounds that we've done on congenital syphilis. And we've done several hospital visits to review cases and discuss them with the teams in the hospital. Thank you.
Why don't you stand here, Anthony? So panelists, any comments on this? Do you want to go back to the serology chart on the mother?
Sure. I can.
Yeah, my question is slightly different. Why did she have fluctuating titers all the time? Was it an indication for screening for neurosyphilis because she received adequate doses and yet she had fluctuating titers? Second, probably the partner and the patient, they were not treated together. So was it a ping pong phenomenon, infection going from one to other?
That's what we think. The husband finally was tested and treated in New York City and was positive. I don't remember his titers, but we did follow him and we retreated him. But I think this was a couple that didn't always live in the same city, and I think they were that they ping ponged it back and forth during when they were actually together. So our sense is in the time between her last non-pregnant screening in our clinic and when she became pregnant, she probably was re-exposed.
Can I ask, you raised this sector of different labs testing. Now, once upon a time, we all used to, in my institute, used to use the same lab, and they used to always keep serology back so that you've got a titer rise, but you take the old sample out and test it against that. So is this a problem that you're now getting, that your serology is done by different labs or different providers, and that the serology can fluctuate because of a different setup?
We've seen that fairly often where we will get referrals. We get a lot of referrals to our STD clinics by private providers who have done a syphilis screening. The patient screens positive. They send them to us because we do the treatment free of charge and on a walk-in basis and the contact tracing. And our lab will often give different results than the lab that the patient was tested at. And our policy has been generally to treat the highest titer and assume that we can't know which one is correct. But yes, it is a problem.
But one of the problems we're having in the UK is that we're moving to a private lab provision in some parts of the country. And we don't have this facility where we used to be able to store sera at the end of treatment and to bring it out again and test it against new draws in the future. And we are getting this problem that people are showing up reactivations, reinfections on new tests when actually it's just a new lab doing it.